Before we begin, just a quick note. If this conversation about alcohol, identity, and desire resonates, my new book, What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want, is out now. And if you want to go deeper, slowly, thoughtfully, and in ways that genuinely nourish you, I've opened the Thirsty For More Mindset Lab on Substack. You'll find links to both in the show notes. Right. Let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink, the podcast for anyone questioning their relationship with alcohol or simply wondering what more life might hold. I'm Anna Donaghy, alcohol mindset coach, author, and former strategist. And each episode is going to blend lived experience, psychological insight, and powerful tools to help you understand your habits and gently rethink your drinking in a way that throws open oodles of possibilities. So whether you're trying to quit, cut down, or you're just plain curious, then you are in the right place. Let's rethink things together and explore what you're really thirsty for. Hello, hello, and welcome back. Now, this episode has come from a listener's question, and I've heard it in lots of different forms over the years, and I wanted to respond to it here because I think it's really broad in terms of its relevance. Now, it comes from someone, just to give you some context, it comes from someone who's just done Dry January. So as I record this, it's the beginning of the second week in February, and this particular listener's obviously done the January piece. Now, they've got through it, but it had felt quite tight, quite effortful. It sounds like a bit of a white knuckle ride at times. And their question is essentially, how do I make change feel more sustainable? Not just something, you know, that I have to white knuckle, that I have to push through. And I hear versions of this from lots of people who struggle to put alcohol-free days together. You know, there are definitely listeners who say, you know, more extra Dry January, I struggle to put one day together. And I want to pause here because I really get that. That was me for a very long time. Not because I didn't care and not because I wasn't trying, but because alcohol had quietly become the thing that helped me get through my days big time. You know, it marked the end of effort and the start of relief and the moment I could finally switch off. So it was a daily thing. I didn't have an alternative. So if you're listening to this and thinking, I can't even imagine a clear day right now, you know, bully for you if you've managed to do Dry January, but I can't even imagine a clear day, please know that there is nothing wrong with you. It certainly doesn't mean that you lack discipline or commitment. It usually just means that you're tired and overloaded or carrying more than you have space to acknowledge. So that is why this episode isn't about removing something and hoping for the best. It's about adding support and meeting your day with more care, more intention. I'm going to use that word a lot, and more choice, so that alcohol doesn't have to do all the heavy lifting. I also hear people say to me, I really like what you talk about, your whole approach, you know, the positive self-talk, the intentionality, the awareness. It all makes utter sense on paper, but how do I actually put all of that together in real life? So that's what this episode is for, okay? It's not about telling you to stop drinking. It's not about setting rules or completing a challenge or proving anything to yourself. It's not about willpower. And what I want to offer instead is just a way of meeting a day differently, with a bit more support, a bit more structure, and a lot more self-connection. Because, you know, for some people, not everyone, but many, having a sort of a gentle container, a structure for a day, can be incredibly helpful. Not a rigid plan, not a list of things you have to get right, but a loose structure that holds those things I say really matter. Again, self-talk, rest, intention, care, curiosity. So I want to zoom in on something small and more repeatable. And that is what one intentional day around alcohol looks like. One day, okay? A day you can practice, a day you can return to, and a day you don't have to do perfectly. Because often when you practice this kind of day a few times, something really interesting happens. Clarity increases, self-trust grows, and the pull towards alcohol starts to soften, not because you're resisting it, but because you're meeting the underlying needs in another way. So in this episode, I'm going to walk you through a simple daily structure. As I say, not as instructions, but options. Take what fits, leave what doesn't. And certainly, you hear me use this word a lot, think of it as an experiment, not a test. So if you've been white-knuckling change, if you've been wondering how to make this feel more human, if you've been asking how all of this actually comes together in the day-to-day, then this episode is for you. All right, okay, let's begin in a very obvious place, the start of the day. The start of the day. Most of us have very set morning routines. Families to organize, kids to get out the door, jobs to get to, phones are picked up almost automatically, emails, messages, notifications. The day just tends to start on autopilot. This followed by that, almost like a drill, an organized assault, timed to precision, often timed to getting out the door, you know, to the minute, or sitting down at your desk at home and starting same time every day. But it means that before we've really arrived in ourselves, I know that sounds like a bit of a sort of coaching sort of wanky term, but before we've even sort of settled and sort of worked out how we're feeling that day, we're already reacting, we're already responding to known rituals, other people's needs, other people's timelines, other people's priorities. So the first thing I'm going to do is suggest something that's really small, but it really matters. I want you to find 10 minutes. You'll need to think about how you can carve this out in a way that actually works for your life. For some people, it might mean getting up 15 minutes earlier before the world gets really loud. For others, it might be finding that 10 minutes, you know, after the school run, before the transition into work or the rest of the day. For me, I have a 15-minute block in my work diary every day that is completely sacrosanct. Nothing goes in it. It's like a set meeting, 15 minutes for me, just to settle myself. But it doesn't have to look like that. It might be sitting in the car park with a takeaway coffee before you go into the office. It might be at the kitchen table once the house has gone completely empty. It might be standing by the window, kettle boiled, day paused just briefly. Whatever it looks like for you, this is what I call, you know, my coffee with myself. I sit down, I have that 15 minutes, I have a cup of coffee, and the practice is really simple. Make that drink, that coffee, that tea, whatever you're doing, sit for just a few minutes without your phone and ask yourself one really gentle question. Not loads of them, just one. Okay, and the question might be, how do I want to feel today? Another question you could ask yourself is, you know, what would make today really kind on me? Or another question could be, you know, what do I need more of right now? Energy, ease, reassurance, space. But one of those three questions is just enough to turn the attention to yourself. So how do I want to feel today? Or what would make today feel kind? Or what do I need more of right now? You don't need a perfect answer. You don't need to write anything down unless you want to. You're not trying to fix or optimize your day. That's really important. This isn't a chore. This is a question to yourself. You're just checking in. And whatever it looks like, you know, please don't skip this part because it really matters, because this is how you establish self-connection before autopilot kicks in, before the day decides who you're going to be. Very, very often, the drink that we reach for in the evening isn't really about the evening at all. It's about filling a gap that opened up much earlier in the day when we didn't pause, we didn't check in, we didn't give ourselves anything before giving everything away. And this is where that gap begins to close with that simple morning check-in, okay? Now, this next part might raise a small eyebrow for some of you, and that's okay. Bear with me, because when we hear the word mantra, it can conjure up images of something a bit lofty, a bit forced, something cheesy, something that we might see on a fridge magnet or an Instagram post. So let me be really clear about what I mean when I talk about mantras. I do not mean life's declarations. I do not mean a goal. It's not a promise. It's not something you have to live up to. Think of it more as a sort of a tone setter, a quiet line that you can return to when the day starts speeding up. Now, from a psychological point of view, this works because the brain really likes something to orientate around. When everything feels urgent, the nervous system scans for threats and reacts accordingly. So a simple phrase repeated gently gives your attention somewhere to land. It reduces cognitive load and helps regulate decision-making. So in other words, it is definitely not about forced positivity or fake positive thinking. It's about reducing noise. So how do you actually choose one of these without overthinking it? Well, a simple way is this. Don't ask yourself what you want to be better at. Ask where you tend to get pulled off center. So your mantra works best when it gently counterbalances your default patterns, not when it tries to fix you. So, for example, if you're someone who wakes up feeling like they're already behind, mentally running through lists before their feet even hit the floor, your mantra might be, today is more about being present than it is about performing. So today being present is more important than performing. If you're someone who tends to, you know, push yourself, power through, and only rest once you're exhausted, your mantra could be, today I will slow down. If you're someone who feels that everything is urgent, every email, every request, every decision, you might try clarity over urgency is the mantra for today. And if you're prone to turning change into a test, you know, passing or failing or being good or bad at something, a helpful line could be, you know, this is an experiment, not a test. If you're someone who's really hard on yourself when things don't go to plan, you might think, well, good is good enough. Things don't have to be perfect today. So you see, you're fitting to your mantra to the kind of person that you are, where you know you're likely to, as I say, be pulled off center. None of these things are commandments. They're not trying to make you different. They're simply there to interrupt the moment when autopilot risks taking over and to remind you that you have more choice than it sometimes feels like. So if one line stands out, maybe one of the ones I've just mentioned, use it. If none of them do, that's okay too. The right mantra usually feels relieving straight away, not inspiring, just relieving. It creates a tiny little like, oh yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, that's going to work. Now, notice how none of these demand performance. They don't require motivational discipline. They're just offering up a way of meeting moments as they arise. And that part is really important. You're not here to perform your mantra. This isn't yet another thing you have to perform. You're not trying to live it perfectly. You're just trying to carry it loosely. It's a reference point. So when things feel rushed, you come back to it. When you feel pulled in 10 different directions, you can come back to it. And actually, if you forget about it entirely for a few hours, that's fine too. This isn't about doing it right. It's about giving your day a quieter center. Right. The start of the day, the pause, and then agreeing a mantra. Okay, the third thing I'm going to talk about is the often overlooked but incredibly important lever, which is strategic rest. One of the biggest misunderstandings I see both in myself in the past and in the people I work with now is this idea that we forget to rest. In fact, we don't even, we don't actually even forget to rest. We forget that we even need it. We push on, we override the signals. And by the time evening comes and we're actually feeling, you know, exhausted, what we're feeling then isn't really a craving, it's fatigue. Most evening drinking urges are fatigue signals, not desire. They're the body and the nervous system saying, I need relief. I need a break. I need something to switch this off. And if rest doesn't happen deliberately during the day, it often gets outsourced to alcohol in the evening. Now, I want to say this clearly. You know, people's days look very different. Some of you will have a lot of autonomy over your diary, and some of you will have almost none. So shift work and caring roles and client-facing jobs and driving and teaching, the idea of just taking a break can feel really unrealistic. I get that. So this isn't about adding another thing you should be doing. It's about working with the life that you actually have. If you do have some control over your diary, one brilliant and very practical hack is quite simply stop filling every minute. Hold meetings that you might organise at work to 50 minutes instead of 60, 25 minutes instead of 30. And those 5 or 10 minutes that you're grabbing back, they're not wasted, they're not slacking, they're regulation time. They give your nervous system a chance to settle, to breathe and to reset before the next demand. Even a moment of quiet, a few slow breaths, feet on the floor, deep breathing, is a form of rest. And if that kind of diary control isn't available to you, rest can be much smaller than we imagine. Micro rests might look like, you know, a scroll-free 10 minutes during a coffee or a lunch break. Just a few minutes of calm and quiet in the car or van before heading into your next appointment. Just stepping outside for a couple of minutes and looking at the sky. Just to let your eyes and breath widen. Research around nervous system regulation shows that even brief pauses like this help reduce the stress hormones and improve decision-making later in the day. In other words, rest isn't a reward. It certainly doesn't have to be earned. It's a requirement. And when we build tiny moments of rest into the day, something really important happens. The evening doesn't have to carry the whole weight of relief. You're no longer asking alcohol to do all the heavy lifting. You've already given your system some hugs and care along the way. Now, the next piece of this structure that underpins an intentional day is hydration. And I want to approach this carefully because this is not about ticking boxes and policing yourself. This isn't drink more water, said sternly. It's hydration in a sort of, I don't know, think of it as a small, steady way of signaling safety to the body. Bear with me on this one. From a physiological point of view, even mild dehydration can increase fatigue, and it can increase irritability, and it can increase brain fog, and it causes the production of stress hormones like cortisol. Hydration is a fundamental need, and the body gets stressed when it doesn't have it. And when we're tired, or flat, or overstimulated, so if we're feeling irritable, if we've got that brain fog, if cortisol is coming into our system, if we're tired, if we're flat, or we're overstimulated, the nervous system naturally looks for relief. Sometimes what we interpret as a craving, specifically late afternoon or early evening, is actually thirst layered on top of exhaustion. Now in the UK, general guidance is around, I think it's 6 to 8 glasses of fluid a day, roughly 1.5 to 2 litres, more obviously if you're active or stressed or drinking lots of caffeine. Now that's not a rule, it's just a really good reference point. And what tends to work better than aiming for a total is using marker drinks. So, you know, a few intentional check-ins across a day. So have a drink in the morning, a pint of water in the morning, have a pint of water mid-afternoon, have a pint of water with your lunch, and one in the early evening before the witching hour properly kicks in. So you're not forcing anything, you're just reducing the background strain that your system is carrying. And it really helps. It really helps if the hydration itself feels nice. So add some citrus, add some fresh mint, you know, use a nice glass that you like, buy yourself a really posh and lovely designed water bottle. Make it feel deliberate rather than dutiful, because when something feels pleasant, the nervous system receives it as care, okay, not correction. Now, there isn't strong evidence that hydration alone stops evening drinking. Of course there isn't. And I will be honest with you about that. But there is good evidence that being properly hydrated improves energy and concentration and emotional regulation. And when those things are supported earlier in the day, the urge to seek fast relief in the evening softens. So instead of thinking, oh, I shouldn't want to drink, hydration quietly supports the question, what does my body actually need right now? And I often describe this as a small way of just telling your nervous system, I've got you. You know, I'm paying attention. You don't need to shout later. It's simple. It's not glamorous. But layered consistently, it makes the day feel more resourced and the evening less demanding. Now, of course, we're going to talk about what I call the witching hour. This is the point in the day when the drinking voice tends to get loudest and when habit and routine again crop up and are at their strongest. It's the moment that the day starts to loosen its grip, or at least it's meant to. Work ends, not always clearly these days, but work is supposed to end. The school day finishes, the house potentially shifts gear. And yet for many people, you know, especially again, parents and carers, the evening doesn't actually belong to them at all. There's dinner to organize and homework to battle through and bedtimes to dispatch with, cleaning up, or another sort of shift, another round of responsibility of some form or another. And the body is tired, but the system hasn't stood down yet. You know, nothing has clearly said this part of the day is over. And this is where I want to sort of offer an important reframe. At this point of the day, the urge to drink isn't the problem. The lack of transition is the problem. We humans have always needed ways to cross thresholds from effort to rest, from public person to private person, from being required to perform to being allowed to relax. Now, for most of history, it's really interesting when you look back, these thresholds have been marked. There have been rituals, there have been shared meals, there's been music or prayer or firelight, something that says you're arriving somewhere different now. Now, in modern life, these thresholds are much thinner. Work bleeds into the evening, responsibility lingers in the body, and the day doesn't really end, it just fades. And alcohol steps in, not because you're weak, but because it is an incredibly efficient marker. It sends a clear signal. This is a transition point. You can switch off now. You're allowed to relax now. When we only frame drinking as a habit or a health choice, we miss this deeper function. Alcohol isn't just a substance, it's a transition tool. And when it becomes the only one we have, it starts doing more work than it was ever meant to do. So the work here is not to eliminate the witching hour. The work here is to meet it consciously. And that's why having a plan for the hour matters so much, not a rule, just a way of crossing the threshold. So Think of this as a menu, okay? Not something you have to do, but something you can consider doing and choosing from. So an alternative to having a drink at 6 o'clock in the evening could be having a shower, taking a short walk, you know, something that you find pleasurable and sort of decompressing. So listening to music through your headphones and going for a walk, something like that. It could be that you come home from work, or you leave your desk if you're home working and you go and change your clothes. literally get into something really, really comfortable to signal again that that version of the day is over and a new day, a new part of the day is starting. Or you might go for a run or do some other form of exercise or have a bit of a reset, like some breathing or a stretch or a combination of all of those things. Now, these might sound small, but they're doing something really important. They're helping your nervous system register a transition. And that's really, really important. And you might be sitting there thinking, yeah, I'm not going to cut it though, is it? And not as pleasurable as a drink. That's not the point. What we're trying to do is replace the drink as the transition piece. That's the important thing here. Just noticing and being more conscious about what's happening at that point of the day and the job that you're giving alcohol to do. And alongside those new rituals, there's another powerful option of little micro habit shifts. So these are the little tiny changes that gently disrupt the well-worn groove of the evening. So bringing dinner earlier, just a little, you know, watching one episode less of a box set than usual, reading instead of scrolling for 10 minutes, or, you know, preparing tomorrow's breakfast before you settle for the night. Again, I'm not suggesting that any of these things in isolation are going to take away the urge to have a drink. They're not productivity hacks either. They're not about getting better or more disciplined, but they are identity cues. Each one is quietly saying, I'm someone who is looking after the tomorrow version of me. I'm looking, you know, I'm someone who can choose how the evening unfolds. And that really matters, because identity is far more powerful than willpower. Far more, far more powerful. So when the evening contains even one small intentional shift, the pattern loosens because autopilot weakens. Autopilot's been disrupted. And the urge to drink doesn't have to carry the full weight of relief or reward anymore. And here's the line that I'd really want you to hold on to. This is so important. You're not deciding forever. You're simply choosing how you cross this hour, this witching hour, this tricky hour of the evening. When you respect the threshold, when you mark the shift from one state to another, the pull towards alcohol often softens because it's no longer carrying the entire weight of that transition on its own. And the evening becomes something that you kind of move through, not something that you need to escape from. And remember, I'm suggesting all of this on the back of a day when you have been kinder to yourself, okay, when you've been trying to recenter yourself, when you know you've been off balance, when you're building a little bit more rest into the day. Now, the final part of this intentional day happens in the evening, and it's a very small one, and it's about reflection, not in a heavy end of day debrief kind of way, definitely not a journaling marathon, but just a few minutes to help your brain close the loop on the day. Really important from a neuroscience point of view. Reflection helps the brain consolidate learning. When we pause to notice what supported us, even briefly, we can strengthen the neural pathways linked to awareness and choice. So in simple terms, what you notice, you are more likely to repeat. And without the pause, this end of day reflection days can blur. They really can, and we can miss what actually helped, and change starts to feel vague or accidental. So in this moment that you create, just for a couple of minutes in the evening, just check in. You might jot a few words down, or you might just think about them quietly. Ask yourself a few questions, okay? The first is, what supported me today? This helps your brain register resources, things that worked, moments that mattered, even if they were tiny. The second is, what felt harder than expected? Not to analyze or criticize, just to acknowledge, because naming difficulty reduces emotional load and builds self-compassion. And the third is, what would I keep if I repeated this day? And this is a really powerful question, because it shifts the focus from what went wrong to what's worth carrying forward. This is also a really good moment to note your mood, to note your emotions, and to note down any small wins, even ones that might not look impressive on the outside. And that could be, you know, I paused for 5 minutes between meetings today. I chose rest. I drank more water. I noticed an urge and didn't act on it. And, you know, and if it feels right, you can add one small note of gratitude. And gratitude is amazing because it tilts your brain towards looking for the good things in life. Gratitude can be as simple as, I'm grateful for that lovely cup of coffee that I had, or I'm grateful for that little interaction I had with my neighbor. And I want you to then think about ending this part with something really important. It's not about fixing anything. It's just about noticing what worked, because that noticing is trust building, and it's how change becomes more sustainable, and it's how one intentional day does become something you can return to again and again. In a lot of recovery environments and a lot of alcohol conversations, a lot has been said and continues to be said about just take it one day at a time. This kind of day, this intentional day, is exactly what's being referred to there. Trying these different things, noticing what works, building on it, repeating it the next day. So what I've just walked you through isn't a challenge or a rule book or a perfect day to aim for. It's simply what a supported day can look like, a day that brings together intention and self-awareness, self-compassion and positive self-talk, nourishment, rest, care, and a willingness to notice rather than judge. So it starts in the morning with that coffee with yourself, a few quiet moments before autopilot takes over where you can check in rather than brace yourself for the day. It's supported by a light mantra or intention, not something to perform, but something you can return to when things feel rushed or noisy. It is held together with strategic rest, remembering that most evening urges are fatigue signals and that rest doesn't have to be dramatic to be effective. It includes hydration. Again, just a small steady signal to your nervous system that you're paying attention. And then it meets that most tender part of the day, the witching hour, with understanding rather than resistance, through transition rituals, through micro-habit shifts, and through conscious ways of crossing the threshold from effort to rest. Not to be productive, but to remind yourself who you are and what you need. And it closes with reflection, noticing what supported you, what felt harder than expected, and what you'd keep if you repeated that day. Not to fix, just to learn. Because this is how self-trust is built, quietly, through attention rather than force. And I want to leave you with this. If you repeat this day once, that's meaningful. If you repeat it 3 times, you're building evidence. If you repeat it for a week, you haven't completed a challenge. You've practiced a relationship with yourself that alcohol often interrupts. This is awareness, not abstinence. It's structure as support, not control. And it's progress over perfection every time. And the most important thing to remember is this. You can return to one intentional day at any point. You can set a certain day of the week and say, Mondays are my really intentional days, or you can just return to it after you've wobbled or had a heavy one. You're never just starting over. You're just choosing once more how to meet the day. Brilliant. If you are listening to this and thinking, wow, that feels very supportive and I'd like a bit more of that, then that's very much what the Thirsty for More Mindset Lab is for. It's where I share reflections and tools and practices to help you return to yourself. Not to be fixed, I always say, but to be understood. You can dip in when it's useful. You can step back when it's not. It's there as a companion and not a commitment. Okay. Now, the link to that, to my website, to everything referenced here, are in the show notes. And on that note, I'm going to leave you, and I will be back next week with another episode of Big Drink Rethink. Thank you for listening and getting curious. Please rate, review, and follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're choosing to listen. It really helps other people find the show. And don't forget to tune in to the next episode. And you can find all of my resources and become part of The Big Drink Rethink by heading to my website, thebigdrinkrethink.com.